This podcast is brought to you by Viva Global. Experience the difference with Viva. You are listening to FNR Football Nation Radio.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR Football Nation Radio.
Hello, I'm your host, Louise Taffer, with Josh Parrish. Welcome to the show. It's great to have your company this evening. Coming up, Asian football writer Martin Lowe will join us to go through all of the upcoming Asian Champions League action. And later on, we'll be speaking to our Australians abroad expert, Damien Davies. Please remember, you can get involved at any time by giving us a call on 03 99 44 99 99, or you can tweet to us at FNR underscore radio, or if you are with us on Facebook Live, please comment below. I have, unfortunately, a sick co-host with me in the studio tonight.
I will try and soldier through.
And I'll be here if you need any tissues.
Okay.
Well, just, I don't know where the tissues
are.
It's
great to know. You've got my back, but you know, I think I'll be right. It's just the sniffles.
We do have a big show to get through, and there has been quite a lot of news, especially overnight when we wrapped up last night's show. A lot of news broke in between then and now, including some regarding the Matildas.
Indeed, the Matildas have booked in a last minute friendly match against the Netherlands, which will be their last chance to prepare ahead of the World Cup. That match taking place on, I believe, June the 1st. So a great test against a side ranked very similarly to them. I think they're only one spot below the Matildas in the world rankings at present. And we were crying out for another game. The USA have about four matches before the World Cup. So, you know, they really needed at least one, and quality opposition to face as well. So terrific, in my opinion.
It's very much needed ahead of the FIFA Women's World Cup in France. And what better way to face, I think, world number eight, the Netherlands, who are the reigning European champions as well. They've got an incredible team. And again, great preparation for Ante Milicic and his squad as they head into the FIFA Women's World Cup.
And we didn't get a chance to hear from you. I expect you watched the game on Friday against the USA, a thrilling end-to-end contest. What do you think some of the issues that maybe the Matildas need to work on in between now and the World Cup from that game?
It was a very explosive game, to say the least.
It's ridiculous.
Quite evident that both countries, USA and the Matildas, Australia, need to work on defence. So while there were some positives to take away, including young Ellie Carpenter's beautiful goal line save, I still think that we need to be a lot tighter in defence. And that'll come with whoever Ante Milicic ends up picking. We know that Steph Catley wasn't there. She was injured. Gemma Simon came in. So there were a few tweaks and changes, which is, as I said, expected, given it was only a friendly match heading into the FIFA Women's World Cup. This is what you want to do. This is what you want to see from Ante Milicic. You want to see him trying new formations, styles, and also putting new players in there to work out what the best fit is. So I think that they need to tighten up defence, in defence. I'm still not quite sure about some of the midfielders, including Emily Van Egmond.
Yeah, I was going to bring her up, actually. I think, you know, defences live or die, not just on the back of the actual back four, but also the pressure the midfielders apply. And Emily Van Egmond was coming up short in that respect. I think her very pedestrian effort on the goal to Tobin Heath, I believe it was, the cross into the area where she clearly saw her there and just didn't take proactive action to mark up. And it's that kind of, you know, lack of defensive concentration that, you know, she has this very laconic style. She's very good on the ball, as we know, you know, can hit a beautiful pinpoint pass, but some other areas of her game I think are a little bit lacking. She's not a complete player. She's, you know, her movement is not that sharp. She's, you know, she's lacking in pace, and defensively speaking, I think she can be a bit of a sieve. So, you know, having Elise Kellen-Knight alongside her certainly covers up some of those weaknesses, but I'll be thinking long and hard if I were Ante Milicic about what is the preferred midfield setup. We saw Tamika Yallop, formerly known as, the artist formerly known as Tamika Butt.
She's great at cleaning up.
Yeah, but she was playing out on the right wing, and I you know, I said on Friday, I just don't think that's her position, and she can cover a lot more ground in that midfield role. Also, Katrina Gorry, totally different sort of player to either of those, Van Egmond or Tamika Yallop. She came on for the last few minutes, just coming back from injury, just such a unique skill set that she has in terms of finding small spaces and being able to unlock defences, as well as, you know, being able to apply pressure. She's got, you know, that ability to dribble and also run off the ball, and it's got a little bit more mobility and pace about her than Van Egmond. So I think those two players, that would be my ideal midfield three. I've obviously, you know, I'm not Ante Milicic, not going to tell him how to do his job, but in my opinion, Kellen Knight, the Gorry and Yallop would be a phenomenal three in midfield. They all seem to complement each other.
I agree with that. And again, we touched on the fact that this is the time for Ante Milicic to really focus on tweaking and testing formations and working out which individuals are best for the job and who works best with each other. In the last Cup of Nations match against Argentina, he went with a 4-3-3. And in that last match against the USA, he went with a 4-4-2. So you mentioned that Tamika Yallop or Tamika Butt was out on like a more...
She was on the right-hand side. She was playing the right wing, which is a totally unfamiliar role for her.
A wide role.
Probably an experiment, not necessarily one that worked.
I would have switched her with Van Egmond and maybe put her out there. Or... Probably wouldn't have started Van Egmond at all.
No, I don't think Van Egmond can play on the wing. I think if anyone, you should probably have moved either Sam Kerr or Caitlin Ford out to a wide role. They've both done that in the past.
Well, what we went with against Argentina, we had the midfield three was Harrison, Kellen Knight and Alex Chidiak. I think Alex Chidiak is really building her case in this Matilda squad as an up-and-comer who's getting enough experience and a bit of a taste of what European football is really like over there in Spain.
Absolutely.
Even though they are a few substitute appearances, you know, each week for Atletico Madrid, it's still valuable for her to be in that environment every day and training with some of the best players.
And in some ways, I mean, she's like a Gorry light in some ways. She's still very young, still learning her trade. I think she's got phenomenal potential and she would definitely be on the plane for me. And she's pressing her case for a start. She wasn't included in that most recent squad, I suppose, so she could go back to Atletico and try and cement a place, you know, in the first team there, which she hasn't quite been able to do yet. But as you say, really fantastic environment. It's such a football mad country. The attendances, it's such an experience to play in front of, you know, 50,000 fans that they had at the Wanda Metropolitano just a month or so ago. So she's certainly got a lot of the skills that you'd want in that midfield. She can do a bit of everything. She can score goals. She's a dribbler as well, which is important for unlocking spaces in the middle of midfield. She doesn't just stand and distribute. She's got great vision. She's got basically the whole package.
And she has that urgency, the urgency that you want to see.
Yeah, she plays at pace.
And that we
pace.
Saw in Ellie Carpenter at the weekend.
Absolutely. She plays at pace. She's not going to dwell on the ball. She's always going to be looking forward and looking for the direct option. So I think at the World Cup, I wouldn't necessarily start her. I don't think it would be a bad choice, but maybe as an impact substitute, she's someone who could switch things up in central midfield and really change the dynamic of the team if you're looking for a goal.
And regardless, whatever we're talking about in terms of the midfield, I think that Kellen Knight needs to start, you know, almost every game.
She is the linchpin, isn't she?
She is.
Especially when she's playing in her preferred position. At left back, she's a little wasted. She's only playing there because it was a bit of a problem position for Australia once when Steph Catley was injured, and that was only reinforced by Friday's game with Gemma Simon. I don't want to write her off as a Matilda's left back, but she doesn't seem to be quite at the same level, and it is a big step up from the W League when you're playing against the best players in world football. You will have faced a few of them, but you know they're usually fringe national teamers who come over and play in the W League from the US.
It is a massive step up, and we could see that Tobin Heath clearly smoked Gemma Simon for days. And
she smokes most left backs, in fairness. She's one of the quickest and cleverest players in the women's game.
She is, but unfortunately, I'm going to be hard and say that the Matildas' defence against the USA gave USA too much space, too much room. You can't give a team especially world number one, that much room to breathe, because what are they going to do? They're going to, you know, have shots like what they did and be able to capitalize on that, which can be the difference between you winning a game and you losing a game. So the defense really needs to tighten up, especially heading into the FIFA Women's World Cup at France, because you can't afford to be letting in goals here, there and everywhere.
Absolutely. And, you know, the US had some defensive issues as well with some Matildas exposed. It wouldn't have been a high-scoring game if not. I also think the altitude. They play the games in Denver, Colorado, which I think that last goal would never have been scored in, you know, normal conditions. The goalkeeper kicked it about 70 metres and it just the ball travels differently at that altitude. But that's not to excuse some of the basic errors that were made. I also think the Matildas trying to play out from the back was a little bit vulnerable, but I do applaud Milicic for sticking to his guns in that department, considering it is a friendly match. Probably need to be a little bit more pragmatic, a little bit less open when you're coming up against the best teams in the world come France.
How do you think the Matildas have progressed in the past, what, four matches that they've played since Ante Milicic has been at the helm?
I've been really impressed. I think he's used players in their preferred positions in the vast majority of the time, which has been a welcome change. I can't speak to any of the stuff that went on behind the scenes during the Stajic era because we simply don't know. And, you know, but in terms of actual performances on the park, I think Milicic has been, you know, a breath of fresh air, and he's gone about repairing the relationship and very, very professionally, and he's tactically switched on. He's just a good coach, and I'm very confident in the team. It's just whether they can reach their potential in time, because it is such a short turnaround. I think he's done pretty much everything that he could do to get the team up to scratch and playing the way he wants them to in this short space of time, but it's just impractical, this little window. It's circumstances beyond his control that maybe have conspired to make this job a little bit harder than it should have been.
I think that Ante has really tried to get the Matildas to think a lot quicker. That's what I saw, and that's what I noticed when I was watching the Matildas play Argentina in Melbourne. You could hear Ante stressing on the sidelines to really pick up the pace and just get their decision-making to be a lot quicker than what it is, which ultimately, you're playing a lot more attractive brand of football. Not to say that they weren't previously, but he's just trying to tweak little things to help them heading into the World Cup. And I think that if you continuously work on the little things, and they'll add up to the bigger picture. And then, you know, hopefully we can A, get out of the group stage, and B, get deep into this FIFA Women's World Cup. If not, win it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, just changing tack quickly, Louise. Melbourne victory over in Guangzhou this week, straight from their last minute loss against Sydney FC. They're going to have to pick themselves up and play against one of the best teams in Asia. And Elvis Campsober spoke to club media earlier today, talking about the challenge facing him and the massive step up that he's made from MPL Victoria.
What surprised me just how well the boys organised. Last year I was playing in the NPL, where you go to work in the morning and you go train at night time. So I think what the club did, they gave me 2 months before I could really play with the team. So that helped me a lot with my fitness and stuff like that, and building my confidence. I think I've been kind of happy in moments. I think just something that's not working. I put myself under the pressure, trying to score and trying to create things for the team coming off the bench. I think I have to be more relaxed and be more composed and find the goals. And I think things will work out well after that. It's something that really you can't really, I didn't ever think I ever do. Coming from Africa in the refugee camps, not be playing against some best player in the world is something that I can't imagine really.
Cam Sober from Melbourne Victory talking about facing some of the best players in the world, even not just Asia. And Guangzhou Evergrande certainly have some remarkable talents at their disposal. Just such a good news story has been his rise to the professional ranks, and showing, you know, what players from MPL can do, and also just his, you know, inspiring story as a refugee who's come from a war-torn country and lived in a refugee camp for nearly a decade of his life, making it into the big time. And I think he's going to be a fixture in the A-League for years to come. He's certainly shown very early on, very quickly at Victory, what he can bring.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR with Louise Taffer and Josh Parrish. And it's time to cross to Asian football writer Martin Lowe, who joins us now. Martin, thank you so much for coming on FNR.
No worries. Thanks for having me, guys. How are you?
We're doing well, and we're excited for the upcoming Asian Champions League. And SIPG, or Shanghai SIPG, are in town ahead of their clash with Sydney FC at Jubilee Stadium. Do you have any of the latest team news ahead of this match day three clash?
I suppose the biggest headlines are that all four overseas players have travelled. So you've got the big names, the Hulk, Oscar, Elkson, but also Adil Akhmedov have all travelled. Shanghai travelled to this in pretty ropey form, if you could say that. They don't lose too many, so they lost their first game of the season at the weekend. So they will be looking to kind of bounce back, but they are a team that can be got at. The team that they lost against at the weekend, Chongqing, Adrian Mierzewski, scored one of the goals. So if that's an omen for Sydney, I'm hopeful that they could probably do them over.
I think Sydney just wish they'd still had Mierzewski at their disposal. He's been sorely missed this season, his creativity and inspiration. But talking about SIPG, I mean, everybody knows Hulk and Oscar from their exploits in Europe and for the national team in Brazil. But what about Odil Akhmedov? You know, fans may have seen a little bit of him playing for Uzbekistan, but what kind of player is he and what does he bring to the SIPG lineup?
Well, I think he gives it a bit more stability. The weakness, clearly, for Shanghai SIPG and many kind of Chinese teams is defensive areas, because they load up on the foreign talent in attacking areas, and there isn't, it's an afterthought for defensive capabilities. When Akhmedov plays, they have that kind of spine, and it was telling that he didn't feature over the weekend because they can then play three foreigners in the Chinese Super League. So when he's not there, they look a completely different team defensively. Saying that, he has popped up with the odd goal this season already. He's already looking like that player that can make the difference, especially when you've got Hulk, who, if any of you viewers will watch it tonight and haven't seen him for a while, he has even bulked up another few pounds from what he usually has. So he's not the most mobile player, but we all know kind of what he can do when he's on the ball. He scored a cracking goal at the weekend where he didn't have to move too much, but it was a typical Hulk strike from good old 30 yards right into the top corner. So I think that's what Sydney have got to kind of be looking out for. I don't think... I could be kind of wrong with this, but I wouldn't expect Shanghai to blitz Sydney. But in the key moments, I think they've got the players that can really hurt them and kind of turn defence into attack very quickly and kind of brutally kind of kill them off.
I can't imagine Hulk being any more muscly than he already is. I think sometimes he's too obsessed with the gym to actually focus on, you know, football.
Yeah, you would expect that. It is really kind of, I've always kind of come into the season kind of a bit worried of kind of the size of him and how mobile he is. And in the first match against Kawasaki at home, where it was a 0-0 KG match, where Kawasaki probably were the best team. And then Hulk from nowhere, I barely saw him run in the whole game, really. Just took the game by the scruff of the neck and took on a couple of players and scored a brilliant goal. And he has it in his locker. He looks like a man that can't get past anybody. But that strength and power cannot be underestimated at this level.
And what kind of formation do you expect them to employ? They seem to have played a few different systems in their opening Super League games.
They usually play three at the back with a couple of wing-backs. Obviously, now that they can play their full strength squad's going to be the team that plays in the ACL. As I say, the foreigners aren't capped for them in the ACL, so they can play all four of them. The key player to kind of shoehorn into it is one of the Chinese players who's effectively the weight is on him, because their talisman from last year and their title challenge was Wu Lei, who's gone to Espanyol in Europe over the summer. He was the top scorer in the league and he carried quite a lot of the burden for SIPG's success last year. And it's Liu Wenjun, who's a bit older. I think he's coming into 30s now. Not the same calibre of player as Wu Lei. However, he popped up again with another goal. But he's been kind of shifted around depending on the formation. So he could be one of the wing backs. But yeah, I'd expect them to play three at the back and then with wing backs, and then try to push up Hulk and Elkeson as far as they can. And as I said before about Hulk, they'll try and minimise what work he needs to do in the legs until he gets the ball in the final third.
Yeah, interesting. Wule's transfer to Espanyol. There were the usual, you know, fans coming out and saying, "Oh, this is just to sell shirts in China." But you know, having seen him play against Australian teams in the past, and the way he started in Spain seems to suggest, you know, he's more than enough talent to succeed over there. But how do they replace him? Obviously, you've mentioned this guy Lou, who seems to be in pretty good form to start the season, 3 goals, and maybe hasn't made the impact that you'd want in the Asian Champions League thus far, but have they really replaced the goal scoring that Wule continually offered season after season?
I think it's impossible to replace Wule with a Chinese player. Effectively, he's head and shoulders above anybody at the moment, and that's been seen with his transition to European football. we've seen that Elkson's played a lot more games this year. I don't think he has missed a Chinese Super League match, whereas he would be rotated a bit more with the other foreigners because they just need that goal scorer at the end. Elkson obviously had been around for a while. He was around with Guangzhou Evergrande when they were successful in Asia. He has that kind of knack of scoring very scruffy goals, and that kind of player that they need. But saying that, as I say, Liu Weijun, the pressure is on him. He's been around for a while and hasn't necessarily lived up to the expectation. But it's very difficult to kind of replicate what Wule did for them, because in the end, he was their stellar player. He stood above Hulk and Oscar and these players, and he really was telling last year.
So what are the weaknesses that they can exploit? You mentioned the defensive structure of SIPG as maybe being a weak point common to all the Chinese teams. Sydney FC have been really unsuccessful in this competition thus far. What kind of strategy do you think would be best employed to try and make the most of those gaps?
I think it's positivity. I think this is the best chance that Sydney probably will ever have. They're in good form. They obviously turned over Melbourne at the weekend. They'll be on a high from that. They're at home. Shanghai don't lose many games, as I say, but they're coming off a defeat at the weekend. So I think going into it as a positivity and go at that defence. The defence is mediocre even by Chinese standards. Guangzhou would probably have a better defence. Beijing have definitely got a better defence. So I wouldn't. It is a team that can be got at. Trying to minimise the threat of Hulk and Oscar and so forth is going to be the telling thing. I think Sydney's struggle early on in this competition has been mainly an unlucky kind of thing, losing to Ulsan and not doing too well against those sort of teams isn't a kind of a recognition of where they're at. Josh Galante, having him back in the side and focused on the task in hand, he could be quite key to kind of minimise the threat from Hulk and Oscar. But I think the defence, I think when you've got kind of Adam Lafondre and with Ninkovic supplying him, I don't think there's going to be a difficulty to break that defence. It's just going to be seeing if they can keep Hulk and et al. At bay at the other end.
And Martin, Group H actually looks quite compact now looking at it.
Sorry, I haven't got the groups in front of me. Group H, which group's that? Sorry.
That's Sydney's group. So Ulsan on 4 points, Shanghai and Kawasaki on 3 each, and then Sydney bottom on 1. So really all to play for.
Yeah, definitely. As I say, they've all kind of dropped points when you thought that they would come ahead. Each of the games has been very tight indeed. Sydney have got a horrible group on paper. So Kawasaki, going into the season, I would expect them to be the strongest Japanese side. That hasn't come to pass just yet. SIPG being Chinese champions, and Ulsan just being very regular with Junior Nicolau up front, who's very influential in the attacking sense. But the fact it's this tight this early on, and as I say, with Sydney kind of going into this match with all the cards, I would say, with the form book, with kind of less of a worry to kind of not to be resting players for the weekend, with obviously with final series coming up in the next few weeks. I think it is, they can go for it. If hand on heart, I would expect Kawasaki and Shanghai to progress in the long term. But I think with Sydney, if they can get a good result tomorrow, I think they can actually put pressure on Shanghai to progress as well.
And moving on to Evergrande, who Victory will be facing away from home also tomorrow night, 10 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time, the late kickoff there. The big question I want to know is what on earth is going on with Fabio Cannavaro? He seems to be coaching the Chinese national team at the same time. Is that a permanent appointment? Is he going to leave Evergrande, or is he going to do the football manager special and take both?
It hasn't been suggested if it's permanent or not. It's assumed to be permanent, but he's not going to be leaving Guangzhou anytime soon, I wouldn't expect. China and politics and Guangzhou Evergrande as being a government club has a lot of links that go back quite far. So it's even going back from kind of Marco Lippi, who was the previous coach of both Guangzhou Evergrande and Chinese national team. So it's not surprising that Cannavaro has been given this dual role. On a footballing basis, it's probably a bit dubious that Cannavaro has been given this role. Obviously, he was the first manager not to win a title in the last 7 years for Guangzhou Evergrande, so he's not got the stellar requirements to kind of take up that role. And obviously, his first international break with China, they did spectacularly poorly in the China Cup, losing Thailand and Uzbekistan, and really kind of in a tournament that was supposed to be there to play them in the largest kind of worldwide scale. I just think that generally China are in a mixed period at the moment. Probably not the best time to be bringing in a club coach who predictably picked quite a lot of Guangzhou Evergrande players. Saying that, domestically, Guangzhou have started very well in the league. They've won the first four games, haven't conceded a goal yet. There was a lot of question marks before the season of whether they were going to be able to rekindle some of that quality. They've self-imposed their own overseas limits. So every other team is allowed to play three players. Guangzhou have come out and said, we'll only play two foreign players, which seems baffling for them, considering they have got four players on their books that they could play. But those two players couldn't be any better. And I would stress the fact that they're probably the two best foreign players playing in Asia at the moment. So Paulinho, formerly of Spurs and Barcelona, and Anderson Talisca, who was formerly of Besiktas, I think it was that. But I think he...
Ooh, I think we've just lost Martin Lowe. We'll endeavour to get him back online as soon as possible. But yeah, just mentioning Anderson Talisca, who played in Portugal for quite a long time, striker and winger. He's been absolutely prolific so far for Guangzhou. They've also got a guy they won't be playing, as Martin just mentioned, Tyus Browning, the former Everton youngster, 24, has decided to go over to China and earn the big bucks. So he's not going to be playing in the Champions League, but very, very odd, stuck out to me. And also, Zheng Ji, the 38-year-old Chinese central midfield player, still playing for the national team. He is just a stalwart. And I saw an article the other day. Actually, we've just got Martin Lowe back on the line. Are you there, Martin?
Yes, I'm back. Apologise for that.
It's all right. You were just interrupted in the middle of talking about Anderson Talisca.
Yeah, and what a time to kind of interrupt me, considering how good a form he's been on. He's really been kind of incredible since he arrived last summer at Guangzhou Evergrande. He was really the reason why they stayed in the title race. And I think he's definitely a player that would be playing at the top European clubs. I think his career in Europe, just before he came over to China, didn't really go too well. It didn't go too well. He was at Benfica and Besiktas, but I think he is that caliber player that could be going to a really top team. He was initially played as a kind of centre-forward, out-and-out number nine in the first half of his season last year, but he's been pushed back deeper to play in behind the forwards this time. And all he'll do will be looking to pick it up just outside the area and really kind of have as many shots as he possibly can to kind of test the keeper. So I think this is going to be an area that I think Victory need to kind of be wary of, to look at those pot shots as he's going to be testing Lawrence Thomas from distance.
Yeah, absolutely. Those kind of players are absolutely terrifying to Victory fans. Mm-hmm. But one of the stalwarts of this Guangzhou team, and I believe still playing for the Chinese national side, is Zheng Ji, if I'm saying that correctly. Had a few spells in England, played for Charlton, and you know, has captained the Chinese team for years and years. And I think I saw, this is a Google translated article, so it might be incorrect, but there was some sort of Chinese high performance specialist saying a couple of weeks ago that Zheng Ji was fit enough to play till he was 45, so maybe he's still around for years to come.
Yeah, it might be because of the dearth in quality of Chinese footballers coming through, but he is still pretty good for his age. I think 39, I think something like that. He gets a bit more of a reduced time, so he only came off the bench at the weekend. But yeah, he's still got the quality there, and he's Perlow-esque in the fact that he doesn't need to he doesn't make up too many ground, but his passing and his breakup skills are there to kind of to be admired from that point. This Guangzhou team, for anybody that kind of been following the Asian football for quite a while, is very made up of those players that were successful at getting the Champions Leagues back 5-10 years ago. So Feng Jiangtang in the back, Zhang Lingpang, these sort of players, the newer players, the Paulinho, the Talisca, and there's also a centre-back partnership that probably will get rolled out for the ACL, and it seems to be their ACL centre-back partnership is Park Ji-soo, a Korean centre-back they got from Gangnam, and Tyus Browning, who is a Scouser, effectively coming from Liverpool. I've been looking at his progress quite attentively. He was brought over to China. He's got a Chinese grandparent. He's looked as going to be the next kind of wave of players that will be made into the Chinese national team, going to be nationalised. At the moment, he's still playing under the English passport, so he will be classed as a foreigner. But he is a player to kind of look out for in the long term, and could make a real dent in kind of Asian football and Chinese football in particular.
That's interesting. I didn't realise he had the family connection. It did seem a very strange signing when I saw him leaving Everton to go to China. It's not a path well trodden by young English players.
Indeed, and that's been the theme. There always seems to be a theme in Chinese football of things around the rules and how they can maximise the benefit for the national team in the long run. Beijing Guan have done the same for two other players, a Norwegian player, John Husetter, and another player who's been based in England, who played for Arsenal, I think youth team, but mainly Brentford, Ian Yanaris. Both of those players have been registered as Chinese players and will look to be kind of be blended into the national team. This is a process that China are kind of pushing as the next future kind of goal, considering how diminishing their talent pool is for the Chinese football team. It seems a bit outdated, and a lot of teams have kind of given up on this nationalisation of players. But Tyus Browning is one of those players that they'll be keen on kind of nationalising and bringing through the national team.
And just looking at this game, Melbourne Victory fans could be forgiven for thinking they've got almost no hope. I mean, Victory aren't even taking a full complement of bench players. They've only got 14 outfielders with them, and they're only going to have a 5-man bench when AFC rules permit 7. So they've left a few, you know, youngsters behind that could have made up the numbers. And Victory with 2 losses to start from 2 games, what looked like such a promising ACL campaign seems to be over before it started. Do you give them any chance of a result here?
It's difficult, isn't it? It's they've got to see it as this is why you're in the Champions League. There's no better place to kind of play, considering the rest of the Champions League, there's barely half crowds come out to watch these, and that's a problem for another day to kind of be discussing. But in Guangzhou, the crowds are usually quite sell-out crowds in Tenhe Stadium, and we all remember when Western Sydney Wanderers went all the way to the final in the Champions League and beating Guangzhou, and that Tommy Urich goal that silenced the crowd. These kind of moments that stick with you in Australian football. So I think there is that chance of they could have got something here if they put the full resources behind them, especially when Guangzhou Evergrande aren't kind of the team of old. They are still a very strong team, and I expect them to get out of the group. But it was a telling time to say this is the reason why we're qualifying for the Champions League. These are the games that we're going to look to win. And it has been a disappointing start. I don't think they've necessarily approached the games correctly. I think they've probably gone for it too early, kind of losing to Sanfrecce last time out was a very bitter blow to kind of take. But we'll see kind of like how fit and firing some of these players are. But it does look like it, as you say, that Kevin Muscat's looking at the final series rather than an extended run in the Champions League.
Well, Martin, thank you for joining us on Evenings on FNR and giving us that full preview of the two matches ahead of tomorrow's kickoff. We wish you all the best and look forward to chatting to you again sometime soon.
No worries. I'd like that.
Martin Lowe, freelance Asian football expert, joining us there on the line all the way from England. And yeah, I mean, it's great, always great to chat to Martin. I think it was a permanent point at the end there that Kevin Muscat probably looking at this situation in the group stage and thinking there's very little chance that Victory can get out of this.
And that was one of my questions earlier on in the season. And I keep coming back to it. Do A-League clubs, despite the way they've recruited, have to sacrifice domestic success for Asian Champions League success? Because there's no doubt, there's no hiding behind the fact that Melbourne Victory have recruited very well this season. So realistically, on paper, there shouldn't be any reason why they're shying away from the competition.
You can get in touch with the show at any time by calling us on 9944 9999 or sounding off in the Facebook Live comments. I'm just noticing the Hamilton Atsiri boys have clocked onto the fact I'm sporting the Hamilton hoodie today. Congratulations to that great little club from Northern New South Wales on their FFA Cup victory earlier in the week. I believe they got stitched up with the scheduling and most of their first team squad was unavailable, but still managed to get through on penalties. And if you go over to the FFA Cup social media accounts, you'll be able to see what was one of the greatest post-match celebration songs, I think, that exist in Australian football. So Forza Atsiri. But continuing on with our discussion, I do really think it's a slap in the face with Victory leaving these guys at home, Akbari and the like. Why is Jai Ingham not on the plane to China? What is he there for if not to step in when there's injuries in the first team squad, like Terry Antonis going down?
Gone straight from Sydney?
Yeah, they've
but
gone straight from Sydney.
They could have flown the players, you know,
it's all
over
a question
there.
Of priority, whether they wanted to spend a little bit of extra money and expend the extra effort to get these guys over in time. I mean, Akbari, you know, he's playing in the State League, sorry, the NPL 2 team, and he's completely dominating. I don't think he's getting any better playing at that level. I mean, it's just a little bit sad to see him sort of stranded and not getting any first-team appearances. I can't speak highly enough of him. He's just such a talent. And the fact that he's probably going to stay on at Victory really surprises me, because I think there's a lot of A-League clubs where he could be a first-team player, either one of the first-choice substitutes or a starter.
But going back to the fact that Melbourne Victory have lost two out of two games in the Asian Champions League, is that good enough, given the squad that they have?
Clearly not, and the season hasn't been good enough either. I mean, you know, they should be doing better than they are, but they've got one of the best A-League squads of all time. I mean, there's a few holes in it. I think the fullbacks leave a lot to be desired in particular. And defensively speaking, I guess in midfield they can be found out, but I think victory, you know, there's questions to be asked about this season. Obviously, they've still won games. They're still up and thereabouts. And they know, you know, from previous experience that in the finals, you know, they can come out in the wash and still win the championship after having a less than impressive season. So, but I still think with Ola Toivonen, Keisuke Honda, I mean, and all the rest of the stars they have dotted throughout the squad, Barbarouches, Antonis, Thomas Deng, who's on the fringes of the Socceroos, they should be doing better than that, and they've got to set higher standards for themselves. The Asian Champions League can be a soul-destroying competition, as they saw in the last round against St. Freche, where they thought they'd done enough to get a result, and then just right at the death, copped a sickening blow, and it was a game that they dominated. But clearly, Australian clubs need to smarten up and their tactics in the Asian Champions League. You can't play the same game that you do in the A-League and expect it to work.
No, you have
in
to
Asia.
Adapt yourself.
Yeah, a lot of the teams that do well in the Asian Champions League, and Western Sydney Wanderers, case in point, played a little bit more pragmatically. They were able to manage games, to put players behind the ball and scrape a result when they needed to. And Sydney and Victory going out there, you know, either playing... especially Victory playing gung-ho and expecting to take the game to these, you know, these giants, I think is pretty naive, and maybe you've got to come up with specific tactical plans to deal with players like Anderson Talisca, who they will face tomorrow night. So I'm going to be interested to see how Muscat approaches it and whether Victory are really putting all that much stock in the rest of this campaign, having started with two losses.
And Guangzhou have clearly had a great run of form in their domestic league. 4 wins from 4. And they are at the top of the table with Beijing. So clearly they're going to bring that form into the Asian Champions League when they take on Melbourne Victory tomorrow.
I mean, you would imagine so. They're a very successful club, a huge budget. I think these teams, as Martin Lowe pointed out, defensively can be vulnerable. So Victory and Sydney setting up to play on the counter-attack makes sense because, you know, they've got a lot of attacking players that they use all their foreign spots on. And the Chinese players, as we've seen from performances internationally, you know, aren't up to the same level. But when you've got Talisca and Paulinho, who just months ago was playing in the Champions League for one of the biggest clubs in the world, it makes it difficult because he's just on another planet.
I think looking to the other group, Group H, with Sydney FC, they have to be commended to some point, given that although they have three heavyweights in that group, they've still managed to keep it quite tight. Mm. They're still in the running. If they can win tomorrow, pick up 3 points, then that pushes them into second.
And SIPG haven't traditionally done that well away from home. I think Victory beat them, if I remember correctly, not too long ago. And even Evergrande has lost in Australia. So the Chinese teams don't usually travel that well. Usually they win all of their home games. So Sydney, this is a big chance. And, you know, having the tight group that they're in, I think, you know, 3 points in this game is pretty important. Otherwise, it'll get away from them.
Well, the Sky Blues are undefeated in their past 6 clashes at Jubilee and have recorded 2 draws against Chinese opposition in the 2018 campaign.
You know who I want to see step up and make a difference? Because they've got the defensive setup. We all know that. You've got Brillante and O'Neill screening in front. It's a good defensive system, and you know they can restrict opposition chances. It's scoring goals that's the problem, and they haven't scored a goal in the Champions League so far.
And it's funny that we're here talking about that, given the strength of their attack.
Yeah, I mean, they've got individuals. The guy I want to see step up is the guy that they brought in January, Reza Guchanashad. He's the Asian player that they brought in to fill that extra foreign player quota. And he's the guy with the pedigree that you want to see stepping up and making a difference, being able to link the midfield and the attack and bring all those other players into the game and score goals. Because Alex Brosk, you know, 35, 36, however old he is now, starting ahead of this star import, it's just not good enough. And given Reza's pedigree, where he's come from, he's played for the Iranian national team, and not just a handful of appearances, he used to be a mainstay, and he's only 31, you'd expect a little bit more.
You would. That's why you bring him in.
Exactly.
In January. And to think that he hasn't really done anything for Sydney FC in this back end of the season is quite alarming.
Yeah,
no?
I mean, he hasn't
or
made a huge
Or are we being
impact.
A little bit too harsh.
I think every player needs time to bed in, but he's had a few months. He's had a couple of months now. He's had enough time to be able to learn the system.
Goal's the same size. The pitch is the same size.
I mean, football is football. Obviously, you know, you've got to adapt to Australia's conditions, and you know, maybe not playing on ideal pitches as well, as we've discovered this weekend. But yeah, Reza, the time is now.
Even if you put Reza aside, Adam Lafondra has been a little bit quiet in the Asian Champions League.
Adam Lafondra is a player who needs service, though.
We know he can finish.
He's a pure finisher, and he needs the rest of the team to serve him chances. He didn't really have any chances in their last game when they were playing away in Japan. He was totally shut out of the game.
And if they're not able to score from open play, do they have to look to try and convert from set pieces?
I think Sydney do need to focus on set pieces, and that's something they've been strong on throughout this sort of Graham Arnold Corica era. And they've got people, you know, like Aaron Calver, and you know, they've got big guys who can come up from defence. But Brandon O'Neill, he's a great distributor of the dead ball, so that's a key area. But I think also transition moments is where they need to get a little bit sharper, because that's where they were devastating when they had Adrian Mijajewski in the team. He was able to, any space that he was given on the counter attack, he would exploit, and that's something that they haven't really shown the decisiveness and the cutting edge in these Champions League matches. Haven't been able to make the most of the times where there's a turnover.
Well, they'll need to have that cutting edge tomorrow night when they take on Chinese champions Shanghai SIPG at Jubilee Stadium. Kickoff is at 7:30 p.m. Australian Eastern Daylight Time. Joining us now is Australians abroad expert Damien Davies. Damien, thank you for coming on the show.
My pleasure as always, Louise. How are you?
I'm great. I see that there were some valuable points for most of the Australians playing ACL and AFC Cup.
Yes. There's been a series of games over the last week since we last spoke. Champions League first, Brad Jones kept for his club. They won 4-1 in the group stage. He obviously played 90 minutes, which is great. Milos Djigenic started. Unfortunately, his side lost. That was the only Australian that didn't get points. In the AFC, Aaron Evans is running around for an Indonesian club at the moment. He got 90 minutes and a draw. Isaac Cernak, who plays in Singapore these days, started, and Home United won. And Harrison Sawyer, who is on loan in Hong Kong at the moment, got 90 minutes, a goal and an assist in a win for his club side. And Chris Hurd, whose club season's now ended in India, he is still playing AFC Cup, and his club had 90 minutes. He got 90 minutes in his club's draw. So pretty good set of results for the half a dozen Aussies or so that are still in the group stages in the Asian club comps.
Chris Hurd is such a what-if for me. He was on the books of Premier League clubs. I think he was at Aston Villa at one stage. He seemed to be set to make a breakthrough, maybe in the Championship. And, you know, suddenly he went off the radar and then went back to Australia and was, you know, out the door basically before he even started at Western Sydney. So his career's gone a little bit off the rails recently and, you know, trying to desperately to rebuild it.
It's only probably 4 years ago we were talking about him as being a future Socceroo, and that was in the days when he was at Villa, you're right, and it kind of all went a little bit pear-shaped from there. He had a stint in Thailand last year and now he's in India. So interesting. I thought he'd be a kind of player that would have come back and actually done well in the A-League. I don't know how many games he ended up playing, probably about a year's worth, but he certainly didn't set the world on fire when he was here, unfortunately.
And Damien, unfortunately, there was some bad news for Matty Ryan in the FA Cup, and Brighton's dreams came to an end at the hands of Manchester City.
Yeah, I'm sure you've spoken about it on the show before, so I won't go into it too much. But yes, as an honourable loss goes, losing 1-0 to Man City is not a bad thing. Unfortunately, Matt doesn't get a trip to Wembley, but great effort. I'm sure Brighton would be happy with how far they got in the comp. Lewis, go ahead.
No, you're right.
I was just going to say he probably highlighted the Aussies in Europe over the weekend. So Aaron Moy was the other one that played, obviously, in the Premier League. Huddersfield lost yet again, with Moy scoring from the penalty spot. And then in the championship, there was a lot of Aussies in action as usual. Bailey Wright was probably the mainstay, with Jackson Irvine and Meredith also getting wins. But coming near the playoffs in the championship, we have Villa sitting in fifth. So the top 3 to 6 go through to the playoffs for promotion. Villa sitting sixth, and Bristol is currently sitting sixth, with Bailey back in form and captaining the side. So everyone's supporting Bristol to get into the playoffs and then progress to the playoffs, hopefully.
Yeah, Bailey Wright, a bit of a resurgence after we were scratching our heads a few months back over his exclusions from the team, but it seemed to be, you know, just the injury issues that weren't really clearly communicated by the club.
Yeah, and it's interesting. I mean, we've now got Socceroos fixtures coming up, so we need to start thinking about who's in the mix for that. Okay. Is Bailey Wright back now in the mix for the right-back position? It's not long ago we were saying we were on a lot of trouble at left-back. Left-back all of a sudden seems to be an abundance of players, as we've talked about a little bit on the show already. So it'd be interesting to see where Bailey sits on the, I guess, the pecking order to get back into the Socceroos potentially.
And touching on that pecking order, someone who I've spoken to Josh quite a number of times about that should be in contention for a call-up for the Socceroos is Adam Taggart. And I also see he continues to make some impact in Korea.
He's going very well. Unfortunately, we didn't have a chance to speak about him last week, but he made his starting debut and scored a double. He played again over the weekend and started and had an assist. So he's getting a lot of plaudits in the K-League, which is great to see. Again, he's probably one that is certainly in the mix. He was kind of very, very, well, depends who you speak to, very, very unlucky or on the fringe of getting into the World Cup squad. So I certainly think he's in the mix now, given our struggles in the striker position. So he probably highlighted what we did in Asia. Langerak unfortunately lost at Nagoya. He's had a good run to the start of the season. Reece Williams was one of the highlights. He had 90 minutes, a goal, had an assist for his club side in Saudi Arabia and celebrated the birth of his child, if anyone follows him on Instagram or alike. So that was good. Maybe just switching into the US as well, one that hasn't been discussed a lot is Brad Smith. He's had another 90 minutes, another win at Seattle Sounders. He's, I think, 5 games into the season now and started very, very well. He's one of those players that we'll have to start talking about potentially as a Socceroos contender, given that, you know, he was obviously not a lot dislike heard. As you mentioned, Josh, he, you know, had a career in the Premier League. He was on the radar because of his performances at Liverpool, seemingly dropped back because of injury and a couple of other things, and needs to rejuvenate his Socceroos career at one point, I would imagine.
Yeah, Aussie's doing pretty well in the Pacific Northwest. If you look at the women as well, got quite a few players over at the Portland Thorns. So it's really been a fantastic start for Brad Smith and his new club over there. And he seems to maybe suit the up and down style of the MLS. It's a very fast-paced league. And, you know, as we know, he's quite the athlete.
It's a great question, though. Is it the league? Is it the pitchers? Are we kind of all getting sucked into it all a little bit here? I mean, does he have the ability to translate that back into a club career in, you know, if not England, somewhere in Europe? Or is, you know, the MLS going to be his path for the next 12 months? His loan deal will end and then he'll potentially move to Asia. It's a good question. I don't know exactly how old he is. I think he's probably only 24, maybe 25. So he's certainly got a long club career in front of him. It'll be interesting to see what that next, you know, 2 year or 3 year horizon looks like for him at club level and at Socceroos, as I mentioned.
Yeah, he's 24, and I read a report the other day, and he actually said that he's loving life in the US and actually doesn't want to go back to the EPL or back to Bournemouth.
Interesting. Okay. I'm sure there's not many Australians that have spent a lot of time there. I'm just thinking back, probably Tim Cahill probably spent 2 or maybe 3 years there in the end, but a lot of the other guys that have been there haven't lasted that long. Andy Rose was there for probably a year or two before he came across to England, and Abini probably lasted a year or two as well. But Brad Smith makes a longer career of it. Good luck to him. MLS is definitely not one of the worst leagues in the world, so he could do worse than that.
Absolutely. And returning to the continent, Aussies in Germany, a pretty big weekend for the likes of Lecky and the rest.
Yes, so Lecky started, which, you know, it sounds like a big deal all of a sudden because he hasn't started that much since coming back from the Asian Cup. A good one that's stuck under the radar a little bit is George Timiao, who is at Schalke. He's been playing in their reserves since he transferred from Victory in the off-season. He was actually on the bench for the matchday squad this week, so one to start watching. And Brandon Borello has come back from his red card a couple of weeks ago, and he is starting again now, albeit for the reserves team. He's back starting, so hopefully he can have a good few weeks. There wasn't that many highlights across Europe. You know, Netherlands was the same old with a lot of our guys sitting on the bench. Amini started and scored. They got an important away win this week, AGF, which was good for their promotion. Sorry, their qualification prospects. An interesting one was Tommy Urich, who was back in the matchday squad at Lucerne in Switzerland, unused, but back in the squad, so good to see. His younger brother and also Clemente were both starting in the second tier in Croatia. And probably a couple of other quick things to mention. Apo Genia scored for his Cypriot club on the weekend. If you get a chance to YouTube that, the goal wasn't that spectacular, but he did a little bouncing kangaroo celebration, which was always good to see. And Isaac Danzo was used again for his club side in Spain. He's playing in the third tier there. He came off the bench. So he continues to get minutes. I think that was his third appearance in the last month and a half. So good to see. And young keeper Tom Glover went out on loan to a league team in Sweden. So he sat on the bench on the weekend, but hopefully he will get some valuable game time as well.
Yeah, a few interesting points in there. And I think Tommy Urich, a big one, considering I thought the relationship at Luzern was basically, you know, over. And he was basically told, you know, look for a new club. That might still be the case, but at least he might actually play some football in the meantime.
I think he's been told three times to go look for a new club in the last 12 months. So you're right. I think, you know, it's shop window stuff for him. I mean, he needs to get out there and get some good minutes and hopefully attract suitors, which was is a good segue. I think there's a couple of guys we need to quickly mention about, you know, the last 2 months or so of the European season. They need to kind of impress on the pitch if they're to get a transfer or actually renew with their current clubs. I think there's a couple of givens, Aaron Moy, Bayage, Sainsbury and Urich. I think they've all got to move on to brighter and better pastures. But the other ones I'd noted need a big couple of months. Fran Karasic, we've talked about him a couple of weeks ago. He's at a feeder club in Croatia. He's certainly got the ability to go on to bigger and better. Wusti Amini has been doing really well in Denmark. Now that he's starting to forge his way in the Socceroos, I think he needs to move on to a bigger club. Mats Luongo is one of the few players I think is capable, an Australian player capable of walking into the Premier League. I think his kind of game is suited to quite a few sides, so it'd be interesting to see how he goes over the next few months. I would dare say he's leading the polls in terms of QPR Player of the Year at the moment, but has he done enough to get a big transfer across to the Premier League now that QPR are not going to get promoted yet again? Arjen Hoistik at Groningen in the Netherlands. He was being talked up as moving to maybe a Palace or someone like that mid-season and has kind of dropped off the radar and hasn't been playing that much. So he's probably about due for a move. And Brad Smith was the other one I was going to call out, and we had a bit of a chat about it, how he's going and what he might be up to as well.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think we'll leave it there, Damien, but always great to chat to you, and we'll speak to you again at the same time next week.
No problem at all, guys. One last thing I didn't mention last week. I wanted to acknowledge Tim Cahill in his retirement from professional football. Massive servant for the game everywhere he's been, and obviously for the Socceroos as well. So wish him all the best. I see he's now got himself a quick gig on BBC last weekend calling the Everton game. So maybe that'll become his career path.
Amen to that. Thanks, Damien.
Okay, see you guys.
Damien Davies, our Aussies Abroad expert, joining us as he does every Tuesday. And we've got a few comments coming in. Ridgy Didge, which may or may not be an alias, says, can we get an opinion on the Victory v Guangzhou game tomorrow night? I reckon there might be a bit happening in the away bay. I'm not sure if there's going to be a huge away attendance. I'd be impressed. Maybe a few expats over there in China. I don't know how many Victory fans actually travelling over for the game. I wouldn't be too optimistic about a result, but hopefully you'll see some good football and you'll certainly see some good players. I mean, to Talisca, we've covered Paulinho and the rest. Tyus Browning, the English centre back, they've got some quality foreign players. The Chinese locals are competent to good, but the foreign players are a cut above. So you should see some good goals. I'm not sure if you'll see Melbourne victory goals, unfortunately.
It'll be a great game to watch. But Josh, that's all we've got time for today. Thank you for your company here in the studio. I hope you're feeling a little bit better. And thank you for your company at home. If you've missed any of tonight's show, you know where to head, FNR's website or FNR's SoundCloud.
You're listening to Evenings on FNR, Football Nation Radio.